Okay, my talk tonight I'm calling Avoidance, Identification, or Wisdom. And kind of the idea for this talk, and it's taken a couple different forms, came from some weekend retreats I did. When we join, we go on, we begin to practice on the Buddhist path, we often say that it's a path toward the end of suffering. So there's a lot of talk about the end of suffering, and the Buddha said, I teach one thing and one thing only, suffering and the end of suffering. And yet, as we're walking the path, it also means that we come face to face with our suffering, that we must open to our suffering, that we must have a willingness to be uncomfortable, to live life fully, which means to live the whole catastrophe, as Zorba the Greek said, to be open to the full experience of life. And this can be confusing because on one hand we talk about the end of suffering, and on the other hand it can seem like in some ways we're inviting more suffering. So there can be this kind of mixed message or a double message, and I want to address that a little bit. It can seem contradictory. The instructions can be about opening up, about experiencing everything, about fully feeling whatever we're feeling, being present for it. And then on the other hand, we can have instructions about changing our patterns, changing our attitudes, our behaviors, our situations. So we're taught a lot about accepting, and we're taught a lot about changing. And I find that people get often confused by this, or kind of blocked in about what to do. This is sometimes called the acceptance change dialectic. And if anybody here is a dialectical behavioral therapist, you'll be familiar with that. I was in another incarnation. You could say the acceptance change paradox. But in some ways, it's not really a paradox as you get to be more familiar with what is actually happening, what the actual process of the path is, of our practices of awakening is. So in another way, you could say this is my serenity prayer talk, which is, you may be familiar, the serenity prayer is, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, to change the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So this talk is somewhat about that wisdom part, about the discernment, about how to work with both change and acceptance. I'm only sort of scratching the surface in this talk because there's a lot of different directions to go in it, and actually this whole talk took a different direction than when I started it. But really, you have to, one thing I want to say, you have to figure this out yourself, because only your wisdom will make a difference in your life. Anybody else's wisdom is nice and it might give you some guidance and some direction, but it's not going to change you. It's your realization of wisdom, it's your understanding that will make a difference in your own path of awakening. Another thing I wanted to say is that sometimes the instructions seem contradictory is because they are. And that's because different people in different places and different stages in their practice of meditation and their path of awakening need different approaches, need different guidance, need to go in slightly different directions. Ajahn Chah, the great forest master, Jack likes to tell the story, and I know it's in at least one of his books, about how when he was at the monastery, when Jack was a monk at the monastery with Ajahn Chah, at one point he went in and complained to him that he's inconsistent. He contradicts himself. He tells one person to do one thing, and he tells another monk to do another thing, and what's this all about? And Ajahn Chah said that he's like someone who knows a path, a guide on a path, to a mountain or whatever, that knows it very well. And he's watching people walk down the path, and some people are veering off to the right. So he says, go left, go left. And then the next person is veering off to the left, so he's going, go right, go right. And yet the instructions sound opposite, but they're all guiding people towards the center. And this is, in one way, if you can have a trusting relationship with a good teacher, they can often help you figure that out a little bit. They can give you the go right or go left instructions or directions where you might be getting off the balance point, off center in some way. Another thing I want to say is that the path can seem more painful in some ways because we are becoming more alive as we wake up. Most of us, at some over our lifetime, through our experiences, through our childhood, through our conditioning, have shut ourselves down. We've dulled ourselves and we've numbed ourselves in a variety of ways. We've become disconnected and alienated. And so when we practice the path of mindfulness, practice the path of awareness, we start to wake up. We wake up out of that. And sometimes it's kind of a shock to the system as everything becomes enlivened again. I sometimes like to use the sleeping leg metaphor, which is, if you've ever had your leg fall asleep, and most meditators have, and it's really fallen asleep so that it's, you can't feel it at all, it's just become a numb lump, then when you lift the leg up, when you move it, there's a time as it awakens where it's very painful, where the sensations of it coming alive again are very difficult and painful, and then it balances out again. So in many ways, our path is like that. So when sometime in the spring, I did a weekend retreat here called Learning to Let Go. And a number of people asked on that retreat and in some other classes that I've done is, well, when do you let go of something and when do you investigate it further? When do you, in a sense, look at something more deeply versus just releasing it? And also in the spring, I did a weekend on working with difficult people as our teachers. And in that retreat, someone asked, well, how do you know when you've had enough of a difficult person? In other words, do you accept them and stay, or do you change and go? So again, this question of accepting, changing, holding on, letting go, what are we supposed to do here? One of the key things with it is really understanding the difference between suffering and pain. And this comes up a lot. You'll hear this in different ways with different teachers. And it's not quite as simple as what I'm going to say, but it's a sort of general description of our experience, the two levels of our experience. There's a level of pain, and the way I'm using it here, pain is part of the experience of being a living creature, a sentient creature. We're sentient, which means we feel. We have consciousness. We know what we feel. And to have a body, to have relationships, to have an emotional body means that we feel pain, and we should feel pain. If we don't feel pain, we can't operate properly in the world. If we don't feel pain from fire, we'll get burned, so forth. If we don't feel pain from loss, we will become completely disconnected and alone. So that part is completely natural and part of our existence and not a problem. It may seem like a problem, but what's the problem is this, what we're calling suffering. And suffering is what we add to the pain. Suffering is our beliefs, our ideas, our stories, our reactions, It's all the ways that we add to the simple experience of the present moment. It's all the fabrication, essentially, that we create around what is happening. It's a lot about how we think about ourselves and trying to protect and defend ourselves. So as we begin to learn more about the difference between suffering and pain, we can learn about what we can actually work with, what we can change, what we can begin to release ourselves from, and what is naturally occurring, what is the natural part of being a human being. So if we drop a hammer on our toe, that's painful. And I don't think it's not painful for an enlightened person. However, the story that you then create about it, about how stupid you were and about how you're going to get gangrene in that toe and this and that and the other thing, is the added suffering. And again, if we feel grief over a loss, that's painful, but that's, again, by itself is not a problem. But if we add in to it our regrets, and we add into it all what we mistakes we think we made, if we add into it the stories of what our future will be from this loss, then we start to suffer. So to have greater understanding about this, we need to know more about what it really means to let go. We need to know more about what it means to be present. And we need to know more about what mindfulness really is and what the middle path really is. So our practice, in some ways, is getting a clearer and clearer and deeper understanding of what these are. So in many ways our practice is about bringing ourselves into balance, you might say, between extremes. And without training, most of us will live our lives swinging from one extreme to another. The extremes that are caused by our conditioning, our personal conditioning, and our cultural conditioning. There's a tendency for most people to know how to avoid experience and emotions. And there's also people know how to get lost and identified and wallow in them, perhaps endlessly trying to figure them out, hold on to them, push them away, and so forth. So with an emotion such as anger, which is common to all of us, the Dalai Lama says he feels anger occasionally, that most of us have a habit of either repressing the anger, or we have a habit of really getting into the anger, feeding the anger, acting out in the anger. If there's a situation that's very difficult or conflictual, we may have a habit of avoiding it, becoming the conflict-avoidant person. Or we may have a habit of getting lost in it, dwelling on the whole drama of it, adding to the drama of it, adding to the story and the reactions to it. So our practice is really about learning the art of feeling and experiencing the fullness of the moment, the fullness of what is, fullness of who we are, without adding anything to it, without reacting to it, simply seeing, feeling, experiencing it as it is. And this is what I'm sort of calling the middle path, the balance point between the two extremes. And our practice of being aware of the breath that we did today is, in a way, a training so that we can bring that same ability to just be present with it, to not react, to not get overly involved, and bring that same openness to our pain and difficulty. So when something arises, and there's always something's arising for us, our task, the middle path task, is to not follow it, to not feed it, to not avoid it, and to not repress it. That's the just being part. the just being. And to do this, it takes a what I would call a spacious, friendly, warm awareness. Spacious, friendly, warm awareness. The great space of awareness. That's awareness that is not identified with anything in particular. It has no agenda in particular, but is merely present and conscious and connected. You know, a number of times people have come to me and they're having some crisis or whatever, and they tell me, oh, they're very mindful of what's going on. And I'll investigate that further, ask some questions, and find out how they're what's going on, or how they're actually reacting, or what they mean by being mindful. And often what I discover is that indeed they do know somewhat of what they're experiencing. They know they're experiencing anger or grief or whatever. But they're actually, so there's some awareness, which is good. But they're actually lost in it, pretty much. And they're completely enveloped by it in some ways. That they're very much identified with what's going on, very much invested in it. So to just sort of know what you're feeling kind of is not the same thing as the full awareness of the full mindfulness. We can still be lost in our dramas and know a bit about what we're feeling, but we don't know that we're lost. So part of the practice is beginning to recognize being lost in our stories, being lost in our identification, being lost in our conditioning, being lost in all the beliefs and stories we make up, versus actually being present and aware and know what's going on without being lost. So our mindfulness is also about being mindful of the process, being mindful of the process of identification, being mindful of our reactivity, being mindful of our patterns of reactivity. Without that, you'll continue to get lost, you'll continue to be in your stories, in your false sense of who you think you are. Actually going to have you do a little exercise. So I'm sort of beginning to talk here about balance and the middle way-ish path. And I'm thinking of balance as that, again, that place between extremes. So I'd like everybody to stand up. You're not going to have to do too much. This will be pretty easy. And it would be best if you can stand up on the hard floor somewhere, and also give you a little bit of room around you. You don't need a whole lot. So we're going to do a little balancing exercise. So I like everybody to shift your weight to your right foot. And you might put your arms up to help with your balance. And then I just want you to lift up your left foot off the floor and maintain your balance on that right foot. And watch what it takes to maintain balance. I want you to pay attention. What does it take to maintain balance? What are you doing? What is the awareness, the mind doing? Okay, you can put that down, but stay standing for a moment. Stretch out a little bit. So what, I want to hear from people, what did you do? What did you have to do to maintain balance?
Awareness of sensation.
Awareness of sensation, yeah. And
constantly adjust.
Constantly adjust, right?
Little tensions in the leg.
Tension.
The right leg. Like flexing it and tightening up on various sides.
Yeah, so that's kind of part of the adjustment. Yeah.
Tension to the breath.
Tension to the breath.
It's almost like the exact opposite direction you're moving in. You have to counterbalance.
Counterbalance.
Mm-hmm.
often.
I had to focus my eyes on one object so I wouldn't lose it.
So you're connected with something that's still.
Anything consolidate. Consolidate the core.
Okay. These are all great, great answers. So you can sit down and I'll say a little bit more about that. So what we see here is that to balance. Oh, I have another question for you. Were you perfectly still when you were balanced?
No.
No. Nobody was?
No.
Okay. Good. So it requires concentration to maintain balance. It requires a continuity of awareness of sensations. It requires that, someone said, that constantly readjusting. It requires it's helpful to have attention on something that's still amongst the movement. So all of these things. So this gives you kind of a visceral, physical experience of what it means to maintain balance. So when we're maintaining balance in our life and in our how we are with our emotions, with our situations in our life, it's like that. We go off to one side and we have to adjust back to the center. We go off to another side and we come back. It's this constant little adjustments. Most people are looking for that time, you know, one day I'll have that meditation where I'll constantly be in balance and that'll be perfect enlightenment and nothing will be a problem ever again. The reality of our path is that it's this path of constant adjustment. And sometimes it has to be big adjustments and sometimes it's little refinements. And this is especially true early in practice. And early, I mean the first 10 or 20 years. And it takes some effort. Did it take some effort to maintain balance?
Definitely.
Yeah, okay. I want to show you a different metaphor, which tends to come later in practice, although these can overlap and some of you may experience both of it. And that's of, I'm just going to use this as a kind of pendulum. This is another metaphor where pendulum is moving from one extreme to the other, right? This is what we do. We avoid things, we repress things, and we move over here to, we get identified, we get lost in, and then, you know, we move back and forth. Well, as we practice, and the energy, you might say, of our conditioning and our karma starts to loosen, and the grip of it starts to loosen on us, our swings become smaller and smaller, and actually the balance point becomes more of a place of rest. And it may not be perfectly still, but it's a place of rest. And it's resting in the present moment. It's resting in awareness. It's resting in our deepest nature. And when it gets to this point in practice, there's less effort. It becomes more the natural state instead of something we have to keep pulling back. So both of those can be aspects or metaphors of how we find balance. So to this question of, you know, what do we let go of? When do we let go and when do we investigate further? And the whole question of letting go, what that means, I want to say a little bit about that. Because this is crucial to our path of this acceptance versus change. Most people, when they talk about letting go, are, I don't know most people, but often talking about letting go tends to mean repressing or getting rid of. It tends to mean something to do with aversion. I don't like this. I'm going to let go of it, and it's going to go away. And there is, you know, some, there are different levels of letting go. And letting, the word letting go is used in different ways in our popular culture and even in our spiritual path. But in the true, what I'm calling the true letting go of liberation, it's not at all about getting rid of anything. And it takes a certain maturation and ripeness, I'd like to say, about being able to truly let go. What do we let go of? What do we let go of? People say, well, I have anger, I want to let go of anger, I have this and that. If you're having an experience and your intention is to let go of it, you already have a problem. You already have made a mistake on the path, you might say, and you need to readjust yourself a little bit. When we have experiences, we experience them. When we have feelings, we feel them. No problem. It's not about letting go of any particular experience. What we do let go of is our delusions, our false identifications, our conditioning, our storylines about who we think we are, that what we've built about around everything, our storylines about being right, that we created to make ourselves feel okay, the storylines around our assumptions, our expectations, and all of that. We see clearly into our self and we no longer grab on to our delusions. Therefore, we have let go. You might also say that we let go of the habit of being pulled out of the present moment. You could also say, as I kind of said earlier, we let go of the drama. I'm sorry to say that if there's, you know, to all the drama queens and kings around, but there is a way in which we need to be free, to stop being so invested in the ups and downs and the crazy stories of our life. There are dramas in our life. All of us have some dramas going on right now. But we don't need to be defined by them. We don't need to be overwhelmed by them. We don't need to inflate them and exaggerate them. And the result is, I was just looking at a book by Nina Weiss, and the title is, What We Get as a Reward. Is what the name of her book is, A Big, New, Free, Happy Life. Because some people don't want to give up their dramas because somehow they think their life will be dull and uninteresting. And my experience is the more you're able to release that, the freer you become, and the more you have that big, new, free, happy life. You could also say we let go of the chronic contraction of the body and the heart and the mind. In other words, we let go of grasping and clinging. So it's kind of like this. This is, again, an example, not, you know, exactly accurate. But, okay, I'm grasping and I'm clinging on this, right? Okay, I let go. Have I gotten rid of anything? Grasping and clinging. Here, if I do this forever, that's suffering. Here, that's not suffering. And yet nothing has, in a sense, disappeared. I haven't had to get rid of anything. Anything. So most of our thoughts about letting go are often premature or misdirected. As I said, we often want to let go because we have aversion to something, we want to get rid of something. But as it's often said, the way there is through. The way there is through. Through our experience, through opening up, through being able to be present with things as they are. So it takes a great deal of sensitive self-awareness. It takes a great deal of honesty. It takes a great deal of non-judgmental awareness, curiosity, and trust in the process of awakening. and wanting to know what is true, and wanting to know how to be free, more than we want to maintain our self-image, more than we want to maintain our safety, more than we want to curry approval, more than we want to continue to be who we think we are. So I think I'll stop there. I do have more, but it'll have to be another talk. So I'll stop there with that for tonight. And let's just sit quietly for a minute and allow yourself to just breathe and be present. And see if there's any sharing or questions or thoughts you'd like to bring up in the time we have.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.